Welcome to the Geek Whisperers podcast. This is episode number one. My name is John Troyer.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And this is Matthew Brender.
And we're here for the first episode of a podcast that brings social to the enterprise, IT, and technology space. The three of us decided to get together and have a conversation because I'm not even sure what we're going to be talking about, but we thought we needed to talk about it.
But somebody's got to say something, right, John?
Something has to be done.
The Twitters won't tweet itself.
Exactly. Let's start with you. Amy, you're really the brains behind a lot of things on the internet. So tell us, what is a geek whisperer in your own words?
Yes, I invented the internet. Don't listen to Al Gore. I think a geek whisperer is what I always say when I'm most successful, when I'm doing my job, is when you don't know I'm there. I think a lot of what we do in social, when we do it effectively, is kind of invisible hand marketing, if you will. So I loved the title that we came up with because it is, we are speaking geek. We are translating to the IT world, and it's really more a whisper than a scream.
All three of us work for large technology companies, and all three of us have the job of integrating with that technology community at various levels. And I think a lot of the social media industry is really targeted either from a different perspective of push messaging, let me get my advertisement or my call to action or my white paper in front of you, or it is based on a real consumer mentality, you know, Fritos or Pepsi or something like that. And I think when the three of us have run into each other at various venues and talked with each other on the Twitters, we discovered we had a different set of things to talk about than is on the agenda of you know, Coca-Cola or even you know, a TV show or whatever. So I mean, for me, that's kind of where the Geek Whisperers came from, and the idea that we are the folks that speak for the geeks.
John, when you asked me before, like, what is a Geek Whisperer, in a nutshell, I always say it includes passion, it includes community building, and this curiosity that keeps us driven. And when you think about it, what you were just saying, that, you know, when somebody connects with Coca-Cola or connects with Doritos, or there's that great Taco Bell and Old Spice back and forth on Twitter, they're enjoying it. It's entertainment value to be watching these people. But when people engage with our different brands, they're building their careers, which is a bit more serious. That's not to say we don't have fun along the way. That's certainly what we like to bring to it. But we're really driving into people's day-to-day lives and their livelihood.
It is a community. I think that one of the hardest things for me to explain sometimes is that, and John, I think you hit on it with push, and you hit on it, Matt, with community, is it is not the Thor. It's not social media's Thor's hammer. We are not trying to smack people upside the head with content. At least I hope not. Eyes on you guys. I think that what we're trying to do is engage people and encourage them to listen. And it is, I know it's a little geeky for me to say that, but it's a matter of trust, and it's a matter of truly engaging in a conversation. And I know everybody says that about social media, and it certainly can happen at different levels. But when I read a lot of the standard, there seems to be a standard book of social media, you know, that we all implicitly know about, the sort of big people in the community. And I don't know, some of it I'm thinking, that works in some cases, like you said, John, for other groups, but I don't know that it serves our audience.
Well, I know I've been doing, you know, social media in this area for 7 years now, since maybe before there was even social media. I mean, I started off as the blogger guy. And
was that when Netscape was around?
That was before Napster was cool.
I'll tell that story later, but my Netscape story later. That sounded all good, what we all just said, right, guys? But the real reason I wanted to start this podcast was that I dislike the social media industry. I think.
Why so, John?
See, I'm Southern, so the listeners know I'm trying to say talk around things, and John's getting right to the point.
I hate the social media industry. They're horrible.
No, tell us how you really feel, John.
You know, we're all three of us are social media professionals, and I hate the social media industry. They're all charlatans. They're all scammers and charlatans, and the stuff they say it's not been super relevant to me. And so what I wanted to find is a couple of like-minded folks. I know that what I do every day is interesting, And I help people inside my company, and I interact with our community. And I think what we do is fascinating, and I think we've invented some stuff. But I think there's some benefits sharing what we're doing and to getting new ideas from other folks. And I know that there are other people doing similar things to what I'm doing, inside my company. And I wanted to connect with some like-minded folks. And then I think we can use this podcast, hopefully, to find an audience of other people that do the same thing.
Yeah. Honestly, it's evolving in such a way where engaging, particularly in our niche, in our enterprise technology niche, I call it a niche, but really there are dozens of thousands of people that do this as a profession, if not a growing majority of them, as the reach of cloud computing goes into more layers where people have to be aware of this stuff. And it's connecting all of us, because no one person is their own temple of all IT goodness. The closest person that comes to mind is like Cody Bunch, who could probably build a data center in his mind. But normal people can't do that. But no shoes. He doesn't wear shoes. That's totally okay. But we all need each other in this way that if any one of us is going to be successful, we need those connectors. And that's what I love about both of you. You both love to connect people and be honest about it, either in a Southern way or a direct way, and just share knowledge, but also just, continue to build up that sense of camaraderie.
And I have to jump in here and tell my story, because whether people want to hear it or not, this is how I got to join this particular tribe. Because at VMworld this year, Matt and I were standing beside each other watching something on the big screen. And it was one of those moments where we both started giggling, and it became like Beavis and Butthead. And it just, we couldn't stop laughing. And we knew, like, and right there, exactly on the floor of the hang space, we looked at each other and we're like, we're going to work on something. We don't know what it's going to be, but this is too entertaining not to. And in turn, I got to spend some time with John in Barcelona at VMworld in Barcelona. And it's similar thing where it was just kind of full chaos. And, I'm like, oh, do you have a whiteboard? We'll get a whiteboard. You need this? We've got it. And it was amazing just to sort of watch both of you work and get to know you that way. And again, this concept of social media is a tool we use to continue the connection and a way to connect with people, but it's a tool. In the end, it is about the people that make up the community. And that's really one of my focal points.
Yeah, I did think it was nice, Amy, that we immediately started talking shop. And I don't get to talk shop with many people. So I think we should let the audience know that what we anticipate is that we will be talking not necessarily about virtualization or cloud computing or the practice of IT, although we'll probably drop into it fairly often. My goal, anyway, is to really talk about topics in how to be a social media practitioner. Everything from, what your org chart looks like. Are you a hub and spoke model? What does corporate marketing do for social media? What do you do if you're out in a business unit or in the field? How do you do social media? How do you establish rapport with IT people? What are they interested in? How do you add value? How do you translate marketing into the community and vice versa? Just all these things that have come up in our practice, but that are kind of inside baseball of how the sausage gets made, I think.
Oh, definitely. I love watching the sausage be made. It's funny. I mean, I joined marketing from an engineering organization, which is a fun story we'll get into at some point. But I'm surrounded by professional marketers who are wonderful marketers. And I, at times when I first joined, I was intimidated by their skill. I want to learn from them. And then many of them are coming to me and be like, how does this technology work? And how are you talking to this person? I've been trying to get their attention for a year. And you just talk to them? Like, how do you talk to them? We just talk about virtualization and stuff, or like about their kids. And you know what? People respond really well when you just talk to them like a person.
But guys, do we have to give up our superpowers? Because it makes you look like a rock star in a meeting if you can say, oh, you need a something from so-and-so. And like 10 seconds later, and I love the, how did you do that? I'd be like, it's the Twitters. They always know I'm going to say it.
Somebody, there's more tubes connected back to me.
Yeah, somebody once described me as having almost Wizard of Oz-like powers.
Nice.
And I'm like, I'll take that, but it really wasn't that complicated.
So we're gonna lift the curtain a little bit here.
No, share the love, break down the process. I mean, I think having a personality is step number one. And if you're gonna listen to us, you're gonna get one by association. But John, tell me a bit One of the things we wanted to break down, we were talking about how enterprise technology social media might be different than your garden variety aspect of it. What are some of those elements that stick out as like the differentiators for what we're trying to do versus maybe what somebody else who's in the social media marketing world might be looking at?
Well, I think we've hit on a little bit. Certainly Amy said community, and I think that's a big part of it. Our DNA over at our company is actually the social media group came out of support, actually. We built a community site in 2002, and that DNA has kind of stuck with us forever. So we're really more practitioner-focused, end-user-focused, enthusiast-focused. We're really more community-focused than the traditional, you know, what I think of as more traditional social media that's coming out of PR or messaging or direct marketing kinds of activities. So that's certainly one piece. I think that it involves a kind of a sensitivity of you have people that are really interested in this stuff that have kind of bet their careers. They're self-interested, right? They bet their careers on this. They want to learn more. So it turns into a dialogue of how can I help you with your job? How can I help you succeed? And then I try to bring that human element to the corporate conversation. That's part of what we do.
That's interesting, yeah. And on the EMC side where I come from, there was kind of a co-evolution where the support realm was trying to hit that case deflection magic science that everyone's after. So they spun up a community at the same time as the PR department a number of years ago, pretty progressively, was like, hey, social media sounds like a right idea. And they co-evolved and combined in this way that put us under corporate marketing now. But I work in synchronization all the time with the global services, and we've built this very interesting, it's almost hub and spoke, but almost kind of this strange doppelganger that just works really well where we work in tandem a lot.
And see, I'm laughing. I'm thinking back to when I first, before the dinosaurs roamed the earth, started in what was called social media. It wasn't called, I should say, before it was even called social media. And I helped, I will not name names, but I helped someone build a website. And I'm like, well, we need to figure out the customer support angle of this. And they said, well, how about we don't put a contact email on the website? And that way, no one will be able to contact us for support through the web. I was like, I don't think that's not a long-lasting strategy. And again, this was many, many years ago, but I'm laughing and thinking about how much we've evolved since then. And, how I do think that in our industry, one of the biggest differences is that sort of swing at community and also education and training. I think one of the drivers of our community, I've run other communities before that are, and they all are inherently about learning from each other and connecting. But in particular, this is a career path. This is solving a problem in your data center. It starts to have a bigger impact. It definitely isn't just here's 140 characters of what I eat for breakfast. Not that we all don't talk about that, but
you in particular are very good at what you ate for breakfast, especially if it involves bacon.
I was going to say, admittedly, I shouldn't, guilty party. Party one, bacon.
Guilty.
but yeah, bacon is the great connector. Bacon covers a lot of,
bacon's a common good for most people that are not of the kosher halal inclination. Yes.
Admittedly, that can be alienating for the non-bacon population or the vegetarians like the two I'm raising. But other than that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of what we do in enterprise social media, at least what our group does, is we enable the rest of the organization. We train them and we work with them on strategies, and we'll go through all that in future weeks and kind of how we operate. But a lot of what we do is we stop them. And we make them think. We like, no, you can't say that. You can't just put out your form to sign up to get spammed.
You're a naysayer?
We have to, man, because you have to add value. At somebody, and it might have been Dave Weiner or somebody in the early days of the internet, I'd like to talk about communities as a coral reef. And you have to accrete value over time, and you have to put out the fish food if you want the fishes to come. So a lot of what I try to train people is, you've got to have something to say and something to contribute, or people are not going to listen to you. And I think that's a lot of what maybe is the difference in kind of corporate goals and corporate, objectives between you know, enterprise social media and, you know, pictures of cats high-fiving and saying Happy Friday or something. I don't know.
It's really
social
fun.
Social media can all be boiled down to cats high-fiving.
90% of it. But that 10%, that's important. And that's where we do our thing. I'm really excited to dig into the curiosities that I've come across in the last year in corporate marketing, social media, including but not limited to breaking down what in the world it means to have gamification and whether it's just a stupid word or it actually means something. That's been fun. And then social listening, being able to measure, I think that's what's differentiating our time from the years past, where now you can actually use measurement tools and show that your tweet reached more people than your press release coming from a PR agency. And that power, that sort of flattening of the social influence power, is my flag that I bear. I just want individuals to see that they are more powerful than the highest paid analysts if they choose to be. And that's what I love about this.
Well, on the flip side, I'm curious if you guys have had this, but the idea of, oh, these metrics aren't quite high enough. They're, you know, we want to stick with traditional measures. And I think, well, how, it's an interesting double edge, right? That we can measure ourselves more closely in some ways than other forms of advertising or marketing, because almost everything's trackable. I mean, the sentiment analysis and other kinds of more intangibles are difficult. Sure. But I always think that's an interesting argument to get into. And I know, John, we talked a lot about that in Barcelona as well, about measuring. And Matt, you and I have talked about it a great deal as well. And I hope we'll dig into that more about how you pitch that up and over. People expect, well, I put one tweet out, they're going to come.
Yeah, if you tweet, they will come. Yeah, actually, I just put together a slide deck that I will definitely post on our blog page when we're all set here, but just a vendor neutral how to influence on Twitter idea, just using really simple images and like one or two words. And the very first one is like Field of Dreams moment. There's a baseball on the field and all it says is fail. Because the idea of if you tweet, they will come is utter nonsense. Make a Twitter account and you start tweeting a bunch of hashtags, no one's going to care. Like, you have to build this audience, and that's the coral reef metaphor that John was alluding to, that it really takes years and years of building things up. It doesn't take quite that online, thankfully, but it does take investment that you have to be willing to put forth.
Yeah, I love when somebody comes to me right before an event and saying, yeah, we want to start a new Twitter account for this event that's starting next week. And I'm like, okay, well, who's following it? Well, and they look at me like I wasn't speaking English. And I'm, why don't we just use the accounts we already have? Let's just do that. Let's tweet from there.
What? That's going to be an episode, if not an entire series of it. Why you should not open another Twitter account.
Yeah.
What not to wear for social media.
Yeah, I want to get into analytics too, because I'm like, we'll have an interesting discussion, Matt, I'm kind of Grizzly Adams here.
And, okay.
I live in the forest with a, you know, with a hatchet and a
shmata,
and a blanket. And so I'm kind of distrustful of all these newfangled gadgets you guys are bringing on a camping trip.
You can be saying they took our jobs in the corner there with your hatchet, and I'm going to be getting a promotion because I've got a reach that blows away the sort of numbers that we anticipate from an entire PR department just with a couple tweets. Yeah. And I have been able to get our EMC Elect idea off the ground because I've been able to measure it through tools like Attensity and social measure. And they've shown that the reach and breadth and depth of that engagement is far beyond our basic PR strategy. No offense to our PR, we found the right influencers and we engaged them on something they cared about. So it just hit and it's just running with it. So yeah, measurement's going to be fun. We've got a lot to debuff.
I think most people aren't measuring the right things. I think most measurements don't matter. And I think most people aren't making measurements that affect business outcomes or business decisions. So I don't think most people should bother.
Very valid. Very valid.
I actually kind of agree with that. And I think it's interesting. Different audience. It depends on what your point is. I think a lot of people like to count. And I think about when we first developed websites, we were all thrilled with the fact that we could count. And then you have to move past counting into something a little stickier. So,
but you notice, engagement. Amy, that you and I are talking about counting and stupid ways of doing it. Matthew had a business objective, which was, I got to get support from the executives. And I want to show off what we can do. So he went down a smart path.
Right. And it was also apples to apples. So using the same tool, measuring two similar ideas with similar metrics. And you can easily get into an apples and oranges comparison when you start grabbing Google data and comparing it to some proprietary Twitter tool. And you just get into a mess. But I know exactly who to bring on from our social listening team and have a good debate about that. And also somebody who's way smarter on it than I am.
Oh, good. That'll be fun. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I can safely say I've made no business decision on the basis of metrics that have mattered.
Huh.
I'll put that out there. No, it'll be a good discussion. We'll save it.
Yeah.
We'll save it. It'll be a good discussion.
Yeah. Shh. We'll whisper about that later.
Fight.
I'm kind of interested. We don't actually know each other that well.
That's factual. It is.
That is a fact. That is a factual statement. We've met each other a few times, and I'm not even sure we've met each other officially. Did we?
We
shook hands or something, right?
We did at VMworld, because I was kind of one of your fanboys. I look up to you, John. Both
well,
physically
I don't want.
And for your Twitter presence.
When you can snatch the pebble from my hand, then you grasshopper.
Oh, I see where we're going.
Then Amy will Instagram it.
Yeah.
That's what will happen.
Well, I don't think we actually sat down and had a very good conversation, though, right?
No, not at all.
I mean, not there in person. I know we've talked other times.
Yes.
But I'm kind of curious how we all got started in this thing. I don't know. I mean, should I start off? I am the eldest.
Oh, please. Yeah. I will sit and wait my turn.
Yeah. Well, social is interesting, right? Because we all came from very different backgrounds. So I'm kind of curious what we're going to say here. I actually started with social back in what might be called social back in probably 1984 with Usenet. I was in college. I had one in my freshman year. I had a very early Usenet account. I had a UUCP bang address. That went through the BioVax, and I started reading Usenet, and I was fascinated with it. And, you know, that's where I went to grad school, and then this web thing started. I'm still reading Usenet, not very good at grad school, by the way. That's probably why I'm not a professor right now. But in grad school, I called one of my colleagues over. I said, dude, you got to look at this. It's this newest thing. It's called Netscape. It's awesome. And I showed it to him, and I loaded it up on his HP UX, workstation. Or no, it was an AIX workstation, IBM. And I said, look, you can get the MIT Science Fiction Club calendar. This is like 1993, 1993. There's not very much web there yet. And I look, a Swiss timetable, a Swiss train schedule. And then the whole thing crashed. And he looked at me and he said, Troy, this is the stupidest thing you have ever shown me. So get back to work. So that was my initial web days. So actually, I come very well prepared to be a social media guy at VMware. I have a PhD in pharmaceutical chemistry. I then went on and started a company. I decided that wasn't for me. I went and started a company in enterprise wireless software. And we founded a company. We raised, a lot of venture capital in the dot-com era. We bought nice Aeron chairs. that eventually went the way. That was not a social media company. After that ended, as all those startups did, I was kind of in the wilderness. And I had a friend working at VMware and kind of came over. They had an opening for a social media guy. And they were in big in communities but hadn't really started blogging yet. And I was an avid blog reader, and I had started a blog. So I figured, hey, I'm qualified to do this. And so I jumped in just for a short gig. I said, I'll be in and out. I'll start my new company after that, but I'll work for VMware for a year or so. And now it's 7.5 years later. So at VMware, I've started our blogging program. I got people inside VMware to blog. I started our blog relations program. I started our social media marketing program. I started our Facebook and Twitter feeds. I very, very deliberately got the VMware community people to get on Twitter. In 2009, I do a lot of social media consulting internally, And then I started our kind of influencer evangelist program, the VExpert program. So it's been a long haul at VMware, but I started very early, back in 1983, and I've always fascinated with how people communicate online and the dynamics. If you go back and look at the Plato system from the University of Illinois, or the very early Habbo Hotel, or all the very early stuff in the 80s, the Well, the exact same dynamics are happening now. There's nothing new under the sun. People interact the very same way online. It's fascinating. I'm just fascinated by people and how they interact.
I love
it. I'm right there with you, John. I started a bit after that, but similar concept. Netscape was just coming around. I actually came from a publishing background. I'm an English and political science major. Tell no one. And I worked for the publisher that published the official Netscape books. So that was some of my early editorial experience.
Screenshots, blink tags.
Exactly. And, you know, started on a Commodore 64 way back when, and my parents thought I was only going to play games all day, so they refused to buy me much software cartridges to go with the Commodore 64. So I was forced to learn to program BASIC to justify my screen time. I think that kicked off my love of geekdom.
Nice.
And little did I know, that was what was going to put me on this journey. I did websites and what they would call web marketing or online marketing, and it sort of naturally evolved. And I love exactly what you said about nothing new under the sun, because I ran communities, PHP, BB boards way back when.
Yeah,
and it really is about a platform. It's about giving people a medium to connect. And, you know, you start to learn about short form copy, and that prepares you for Twitter. And then Twitter's here, or Facebook, and all these things start to connect, and each platform evolves to the next one, and it's amazing to watch. It's the sort of million monkeys theory, right? If you give a million monkeys typewriters, they'll eventually type the works of Shakespeare, or 1,000 monkeys, or however many monkeys is involved. And I feel like if they put all the monkeys on Twitter, we'll eventually find these new and more interesting ways to connect. It's a virtual water cooler, and trying to explain that to people of, no, I've met some of these people in real life, but a lot of these people I know from online, but I know I'm better than the people who live three houses down.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
I love that. So I feel like such a child in this one, because I did start in the 90s with technology, but I was 10. And don't judge me here, but I went to a really, really small upstate New York school, and it was in the middle of nowhere. There was barely any kids. I graduated with 22 kids from a public school. But the interesting part of that, it was also a rather affluent community where people vacation. I was not one of them, but I lived there. And that gave us a lot of money to have a lot of great technology in this small school. So I was doing some like web development in fourth grade. I remember the first time.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the first time we pulled up Dreamweaver. And it was just fun. I didn't get it at first. I didn't think about it much, but just playing with Dreamweaver and Flash and all of this sort of web dev kind of playground, it's cool. It's always been an incredible feeling to feel like you're creating something. And that evolved into college, where I studied computer science, mostly just because I thought it was hard and I liked that. But I also studied philosophy and psychology. One of those three things got me a job, and it wasn't the latter two. And I just like to keep an ear to the social psychology aspect of it. But I came out working at EMC in an engineering department doing Linux development. But by accident, one day I met a mutual friend who just totally hit it off with. And he's like, "You have to join Twitter." I'm like, no. I've got nothing to add to this conversation. I'm fine. Thank you. And he was very persistent. And once I jumped on, after some trial and error, I found that, yeah, actually, there was a really vibrant community that I didn't know existed. And no matter what I was doing through my life, I always liked to get people together and just talk about like smart, fun things. And I found that that was every day on Twitter, if you want it to be. You can build your own microcosm. And there was a huge community out there that was easy to connect with, and that evolved in a way where I was not doing too great in the engineering department because they didn't like how much I wanted to engage through social as an engineer that knew a lot of proprietary information.
Mm.
that's a fun story for a different time. But
the chatty engineer.
Oh, yeah. but that did get the attention of our social media team, who asked me to run what is now our influencer engagement program called the EMC Elect, which didn't exist yet. So that's been my project for the last year, is bringing that up. And in the meantime, we also brought gamification to our community, which I've gotten very familiar with on Jive and how all the fun of that works. And yeah, it's evolved into this thing where I just love to go to conferences as much as possible and make sure to connect the dots with people.
What I think is kind of interesting is all three of us have had a career shift to get where we are. And partially that's because social media hasn't been around that long. But I think that's probably interesting, and there's probably something there. I don't know, Matt, was it hard to move from a technology role to marketing? Did you feel like you were somehow kind of giving, was there emotion around that, or was there?
Oh, absolutely, John. Yeah, I had a good, I had a long weekend to think about it, because they were moving fast, and they approached me. I'm like, I'm not right for this, is quite honestly what I said to my now manager. It's like, I'm like to be in the weeds with the tech. Like, I want to know how the low level stuff works. And it's like, but that's what makes you perfect to talk to everybody, because they want to talk about that too. And I had to think about it. I had to really have like a heart to heart with myself and think, what do I want for my career? And when I thought what direction it was going in, despite my interests, I think my stronger strengths come in community building and bringing people together and being good at just kind of standing up and shouting and bringing everyone under one umbrella to have a good conversation. And the tech kind of was a second rather than a first. So I took a leap of faith and gave it a shot, and I wouldn't regret it for a second. It's been a wonderful ride.
It's definitely a skill set to be able to have a foot in both worlds. We're trying to hire a technologist who wants to move into marketing right now for our group, and it's really hard. It's really hard to find. I don't know, Amy, you had geek leanings, but you were a journalist, right? Or you're an editor and a journalist. Do you find that was moving into social media kind of did it feel like jumping to something new, or did it seem like a natural progression?
Well, retrospectively, it looks like, I'm a big believer of the sort of outlier theory of a 10,000 hours. And I think that the thing for me that's interesting is how all of us did work that was contributing to a life of social media, but we didn't know it at the time.
Exactly.
And in the publishing world, I was on the editorial side, and they would say, you've got to choose between that and the marketing side. And, once you cross over, there's no going back, or it's very painful. Sort of what you describe between the tech and the purely tech track and the marketing track. And so I was editorial, managing editor, line editor, et cetera. But I also was handling marketing functions. And, I took the leap, and it was the right one. Again, just opportunity, right? The webmaster had quit the day before, and they were desperate, and I knew what a website was. Right place, right time. And I ended up developing the online properties for a major book publisher. And, you learn a lot by doing, and then I realized I started life actually as a chemistry major, believe it or not, and thought I was going to work in the back of a lab. So,
oh, nice.
Anybody who knows me now, let's think that's hilarious.
Chemists represent. Yeah.
No, yeah. Sitting down for more than 2 hours a day blows my mind.
Yeah. Right. Me being still and quiet.
The lab?
I know. Well, I blew a lot of things up in the lab. I actually kind of love chemistry still, but I handle it in the kitchen now, and I still blow things up.
Yeah.
But
I turned out to be a terrible chemist as well.
But John, you've built probably, arguably the strongest socially inclined network of technologists at VMware. I know that at EMC, we're constantly saying how we want to be more like the vMug and vExpert mentality. I called you before the EMC Elect idea, being like, hey, I love what you do. I'm going to copy you. Is that cool? So how did that evolve? I mean, you were doing startups, which to me is polar opposite in my head, but maybe you can connect the dots more clearly.
Well, I needed a job. that was one reason. It's something I've always had an affinity for. I kind of needed a gig at that point. The startups were not working. And so it seemed like I've been blogging or reading blogs since they were called weblogs. So I had the history. I kind of knew where the pieces needed to go. And so it just seemed like a good fit. I thought it, and it seemed, and like I said, I originally thought it was going to be kind of a quick hit, but it's, you know, we take credit for it. I will take full credit for everything we've done. I'll take credit for stuff I haven't done. You know, it's all brilliant, but it really, it starts with the product and the technology in the technology space. If you have crappy products, nobody's, you know, you can't, all the fun and games and let's get together and have a user group meeting and let me give out you an iPad or whatever kind of crap marketing stuff you do, right? It all starts around the product. And immediately when I first started at VMware back in 2005, you could just sense this this emotion and this sentiment towards the company and their products that it makes everything else super easy, right? One of the very first things I Googled at VMware, you know, was people who loved VMware. I saw this one quote somebody wrote on their blog: "I have seen the face of God, and it is VMware."
Wow!
And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm here. Yeah. So, you know, it's the community. It's not me. I mean, we channel it, right? We create a safe space where it can happen. But you know, I can't claim credit for the VMware community. That came together. It's the people and the technology.
I'm going to actually push back against that a little bit, not to make that sound like I'm saying that VMware doesn't make fine products, because that's not what I'm saying. But I think sometimes that community and magic can form around something that's kind of average or even.
Uh-oh, we've lost Amy.
Oh, no.
Matt, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
She was just about to tell me what a brilliant genius I was.
I don't think that was the case, but I can follow up that by saying that. Without taking an attack at my own product line here, I will quite honestly say that from a revenue standpoint, the Documentum suite at EMC, it's not the highest revenue builder for our portfolio. That's just factual. But what it does have is the most vibrant, passionate community that we've seen at EMC on the ECN or elsewhere. And what's fascinating about that is that it just came together naturally, where there was APIs before APIs were cool, because they were using a RESTful stance and could share code. And that built this camaraderie of the users that, you know, was not seen again until you see like the really hardcore Microsoft MVPs types and the really hardcore VMware V experts.
Yeah, there is some alchemy that of right time, right place, people who need to talk to each other, maybe because the product is complicated, place to talk. I mean, a lot of things have to come together for it to kind of gel. And it is a little bit mysterious, frankly. Hey, Amy, are you back?
Yes. Apparently, the internets didn't like my answer.
Yeah, thou shall not disagree with John. I think that was just founded on this podcast.
No, I'll mute you. I will. No, I just
don't
make
me mute you.
I told Matt you were just about to tell me I was a genius, but I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
Yes, that was what I was going to say. Before the cane came out. No, I just think it is an interesting point. I don't think you're wrong, but I think there have been great products where community does not form around it, or great, you know, technology. And then we've had average technology. And again, I won't name names or go down that rat hole right now, but I think that could be some pretty interesting discussions coming up, because I think sometimes community forms around odd things, and I think there is alchemy to it.
Mm-hmm. You know,
perhaps guided alchemy, I would hope. I think we've all got a little bit of the secret sauce up our sleeves, but
yeah, you need the passion.
Thus the name Geek Whisperer. Right?
Exactly. Guided alchemy.
Yeah, we take the scared horses and, you know, make them run in a circle. I don't know.
Oh, no. Here's the water. Take that, horse.
Sorry,
hey, Amy, I did want to follow up one thing from your story. I was talking with a friend who is a journalist and social media person the other day, and she was saying the challenge there, much like the, you know, the technologists don't like to be social and the social people don't know technology, she was saying that journalists don't know marketing, and marketing people don't know how to tell stories, and that as a social media person, you kind of have to do both. Is that the case? Is it hard to find journalists and or marketers, do you feel, that can come into this space and do a good job?
I think that's a really interesting point. Again, we keep beating on the poor people in PR, and a lot of J school folks end up in the PR tracks. I think that is a very particular skill, and I actually used to hire people strictly out of the J school when I was hiring interns when I worked in the publishing company, because I found that the skills, the disciplines, it's a very practical major. People coming out actually can do something, you know, unlike myself, to be fair, because an English major, I could write, but I could also think. And I think that's, I don't know, those skill sets, it is hard to predict success. If there was a predictive model, I think it would be difficult to say who is going to succeed or be drawn to one or the other. I think traditional marketing, it draws people. Well, I've been saying this week too, I don't market from behind a desk, and I think none of us do. And I think that, and that's neither right nor wrong. That's just a personal preference. I think if you like to be out and roll your sleeves up, you're going to be in more in what we're doing, which is involving people and that influencer engagement, as opposed to traditional marketing that might even leverage some tools of social, like content marketing, mm-hmm. Which is a little bit more distant from the audience. It doesn't mean you don't have to know the audience, et cetera, but you might enjoy, you know, the quiet time and writing and distributing the content more that way than sort of the co-created content that you would go out and create with people. Two different kinds of stories. Not sure that answers your question 100%. I'd have to think more on it, but just thinking about the different ways content is generated and the different ways to tell stories.
Well, I think on the other hand, if you're a community manager, you have to be managing a community with some sort of purpose in mind, right? We are employed by a business. There is a reason we're out there.
I agree. There's a narrative. I think it's an interesting point you bring up. I think in some cases, maybe traditional marketers might be drawn to a narrative they feel like they can control more, start to finish.
Yes.
And I think the space in which we work, it's improv. I often use improv as an example.
Mm-hmm. Definitely co-creation. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know.
Yeah. Wow. Wonderful point. And a friend of mine does improv for semi-professionally. And he always told me, right before you're about to get on stage, when you're volunteering for something, he said it's the sensation of you jump and then you figure out what you're going to do. It's like you jump and then you hope you have a parachute on. And that's the sort of creation process when you're inventing on stage as an improv artist. And now that you connect those dots, I feel like that quote really hits it for me, where I do feel a lot of the times people offer an idea like, okay, there's this conference coming up or there's this launch about to happen. What can we do socially? And then there's that moment, that blink moment, since Gladwell's our source here, where you create. And it just works. And it does show wonderful numbers if you measure them, because we've paid our dues in building those relationships.
Right. But Matt, that leap of faith terrifies some traditional marketers.
Oh, absolutely.
It freaks them out. Can we have a pre-meeting before we have a meeting on that? And then we'll have a post-meeting and then we'll figure out what we're doing.
But that's why I love this. I make it up as I go and it works.
I know. We need to have a little test of, you might be an influence marketer if, you know, people refer to you as interesting during and after a meeting. Guilty?
Guilty.
Well, let's show of virtual hands here.
Totally. That's frightening. Well, for instance, for this very first podcast of the Geek Whispers, we actually really weren't quite sure how it would go. I think by this time, if anybody's still listening, they do kind of get the gist of what we're doing here. I don't know if we explained it very well up front, but I'm really looking forward to improving with both of you guys. I think this is going to be a blast.
Agreed. I think we have a lot to bring to the table from a different angle. That's actually, there's a lot of people that are trying to learn this. So it's good to have some sort of social leader step up to an empty stage and see if we can bring people together and learn together.
Yeah, I think we have plenty of our own opinions, and we're going to invite some guests. We all have some folks, both people we know and people I think we'd like to meet. I think it should be interesting for most targeted at professional social media marketers in the enterprise space. But, you know, I think maybe of wider interest. Who knows? I don't know. But maybe we'll tell some good jokes too. Who knows?
I think we've done a great job at improving our way through our first show. It's been wonderful to, you know, kind of talk where we've been, where we hope to go with this, and just, you know, learn a little bit more about each other, because we are coming from a just instinctual, we know we want to be around each other's stance.
Awesome. Well, we'll see. I guess we'll meet again next week. I'm not sure what our topic will be, but I know it'll be fun.
Guaranteed.
Well, thanks, Amy. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Have a good one, John.
Cheers. You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
But somebody's got to say something, right, John?
Something has to be done.
The Twitters won't tweet itself.